Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now. We wake up every day saying, how can we make this show better than the day before? Because we're lead pipe wielding professionals.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
But to say that Bill's not a great coach is beyond the pale, off the charts.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
It's wild that all the NFL teams that had job openings this year, he didn't get one.
Earlier on the show, rock and roll legend Jon Bon Jovi. Coming up, Dolphins offensive tackle Teron Armstead. Pro Football Focus lead NFL draft analyst Trevor Sikkema. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. If you're just tuning in, you missed Jon Bon Jovi stopping by. It is really awesome, the chat that we just had. If you missed it, we re-air at the top of the next hour right here on the Roku channel. If you missed it, there is a Roku channel video on demand portion of our relationship called the Rich Eisen Show Collection page. There's also our YouTube page, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. We are on the cusp of getting to 750,000 subscribers on that that YouTube spot, and greatly appreciate everybody who hits the subscription button there, and love our podcast as well. All 3 hours available through the Cumulus Podcast Network if you want to listen to it. All sorts of good in that hood. Good to see you over there, Chris.
Hey,
Brockman,
Rich.
DJ Mikey D.
What's up, man?
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to ask him what exit he's from, right?
No, no.
Which exit is the Asbury Park exit? Which one is that? That's where he's from, right? Isn't he from that area?
The 100. I think Asbury's 100.
Okay, close. Very good. TJ Jefferson, how are you, sir?
Doing great, man. It's been a heck of a week.
Yeah. And so, you know, our number two of this show, Teron Armstead, is about to walk in this door from the NFL broadcast boot camp. One of the best left tackles in the NFL from Arkansas Pine Bluff. He's played over a dozen years in the NFL. Yeah. And the Miami Dolphins need him. That offensive line, as we know, got raided in free agency. So Teron Armstead, lots to talk about with him when he strolls in here in just a couple of minutes' time. So shortly before we went on the air, news broke that O.J. Simpson had died at the age of 76. And clearly you cannot talk about O.J. Simpson without mentioning him being acquitted of a double murder in the 1990s that changed absolutely everything in the world of media, in our world, in the United States of America, the way that we view celebrity, the way that we view criminal cases, the way that we view justice, the way that we view everything. And I will never forget where I was on the day that O.J. Simpson was on the run from the police here in Southern California. And I will never forget that day as long as I live. And I was graduating from the Medill School of Journalism in June of 1994 on this day when my folks were there for the graduation. So was my brother, sister-in-law, and we were all out to lunch, a late lunch with fellow colleagues of mine who just graduated from Medill, and we were in a bar. And having lunch, and up came the images. And it was in the middle of an NBA Finals game between the Knicks and the Spurs.
Yeah.
And the Rockets, pardon me, the Knicks and the Rockets. Knicks and Spurs is when I turned 30. So I will never forget that series. And it was of interest in Chicago, to be honest with you, where I was, because everybody thought, had Michael not retired, they would have been in that series. And the Knicks finally got past the Jordan-less Bulls. And there was a split screen. And you just couldn't believe the guy who you knew as one of the all-time great running backs in the history of the NFL. And you couldn't believe that the guy that you now knew as a sideline reporter for NBC Sports and a movie actor the guy from the Hertz commercial who trying to make his flight, right? Jumping one of the most famous pitchmen. Yeah. Jumping over, he was jumping over chairs in the airport to go make his flight.
The airport,
That guy was on the run from the police. And why would he run from the police if he was innocent? And so we were all grappling with the fact that this guy, it sure looked like he had just killed his wife and a waiter from a nearby restaurant who was friendly with his wife and was returning, I guess, a pair of glasses, as we learned later on.
Yeah.
Wrong place, wrong time. Ron Goldman. May he rest in peace as well.
Lord, it seems like it, right?
With Nicole Brown Simpson. And I'll never forget where I was that day.
I think we all, if you're old enough.
Yeah.
Remember? Yeah. I was in a bar in Pittsburgh. Walk in, and I'm like, why is the game not on? What?
Yeah.
And then we just all huddled around this thing like in disbelief.
Right. And he was and he was on the phone. Al Cowlings was in the car with him. And
he was driving.
And he was saying suicidal things.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
It was crazy.
And every news organization had broken in live. Okay. And then the police didn't want to stop him. They just kept
followed him.
They just followed him to see where he was going.
Yeah.
And folks were on the freeway, like, cheering him on, too. It was weird.
Well, yeah, the fact that people had time to make signs and get to certain locations.
Yeah.
That was, especially now that I live here. Back then, California was just like whatever. I didn't believe it was a real place. But to think that in this type of traffic, people could get to these spots, make signs, and hold them up.
Wasn't he going to go to Mexico and they turned around because he wanted to go home first?
There was money and a disguise in there, right? And clothes?
Gone, yeah.
It was just...
I was in the eighth grade, and a friend of mine was over to watch the NBA Finals. And remember, they went small box
right.
on the finals.
On the game.
And then the larger view was the chase. And then Bob Costas is doing the game and going back and forth.
I think it was Marv doing the game.
And Bob was doing
the studio.
Yeah.
But on location,
it was and then they threw it back. I think and Brokaw threw it back to Marv, and
crazy.
Marv is just like, "We will update you as conditions warrant." Pause. We're here in the third quarter in Madison Square Garden, and it was just weird and
crazy.
Wild that and everyone started calling everyone else or speaking to everyone else, saying, "Did you see what OJ's doing? Like OJ killed his wife."
Yeah,
I was
and
in
somebody
a bar.
Else because again, why
DJ.
Else would he be running
exactly.
from the law? And the crazy thing is when the trial hit, they hardly brought up the chase.
Right.
Was one of my memories because I watched the preliminary hearing every minute of it in Lance Ito's courtroom. And you remember SNL would be doing skits on it. And didn't Jay Leno have like the dancing Ito's on the Tonight Show?
Yeah.
And that's when the ticker, the bottom line ticker was born because CNN kept giving updates on other news because they didn't want to break away from the nonstop 24/7 coverage of it. And that's when, Roger Cossack and Greta Van Susteren became famous because they were legal experts to tell us about everything that was going on.
And people figured out what DNA was. It was our first experience with that.
Right. And so the preliminary trial, once I graduated from the Medill School of Journalism, I took an internship at the CBS Evening News in New York City. I lived at the 92nd Street Y for the summer and took two trains to Black Rock every day to go to work and answer phones on the set of the CBS Evening News with Dan Rather and Connie Chung.
Wow.
And basically my summer was filled with watching the preliminary trial with Lance Ito and answering phones of people livid across the country to give me, to tell me three things. One, OJ is guilty. Two, OJ is innocent. Three, where is The Price is Right or my soap opera? They were like complaining, like, why are we covering this thing gavel to gavel?
Yep.
Where's The Price is Right? Where is my soap opera? And I'm like, I would just transfer them to some other line for that because the phones were ringing off the hook.
It was crazy.
I will never, ever forget it.
It really
and
did.
And so just to bring this kind of full circle a little bit here, is because you cannot talk about O.J. Simpson without mentioning the double murder in Brentwood, California, of his wife and the waiter Ron Goldman. You cannot do that. Unless, of course, you're the Heisman Trust, who tweeted out today, you know, they mourn the passing of O.J. Simpson. We extend our sympathy to his family. And again, you know, this man did pass away to cancer, and obviously somebody dying is not something to celebrate. But how do you not mention, and if you're Reggie Bush and you see that, you're like, oh, he's got his Heisman, but, you know, where's mine? Because O.J. did serve 12 years for something completely unrelated to this. That's one thing to say. But we have to remember the families affected. And in that regard, a reporter from NBC News, Daniel Arkin, reached out to Ron Goldman's dad, Fred, who was, by the way, the Goldman family was the face of, the normalcy amidst the maelstrom of insanity that this family had lost their son.
Well, then the civil trial that filed. Exactly. That followed, and
the quote from Ron Goldman's father, Fred, about the passing of OJ, quote, "The only thing I have to say is it's just further reminder of Ron being gone all these years. It's no great loss to the world. It's a further reminder of Ron's being gone." And I just wanted to mention that to finish our conversation on this subject matter. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let us take a break and bring in Teron Armstead of the Miami Dolphins. He's in town to try and figure out if he likes the media thing. He's part of the broadcast boot camp, but as we all know, one of the best left tackles in football. Joining us next. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs, because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show. Thrilled to have here in studio from the Miami Dolphins, year 12 in the National Football League, and the recent release of Crowd Control featured in Madden 2024, featuring this man, Teron Armstead, here on the Rich Eisen Show. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
Now, we give rounds of applause to our guests, but why are you giving Teron Armstead more of a round of applause, I mean, TJ? Well, I mean, and Chris?
Exclusive club.
Yeah. What is that?
But 723 Club.
Yeah. What is
July 23rd for birthdays.
We all got the same birthdays.
Teron, first day of Leo. Yeah. Let's go. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I just looked it up. Yeah, and just
Y'all share a birthday.
We do. He didn't know that until just this moment.
He found out just now. TJ and I have known that for years that we have the same birthday. Okay. But yeah.
We got to share a party next.
Oh, let's go.
Now we're talking.
That's right. Well, certainly if it's in South Beach for these guys, right? I mean,
I can.
That sounds good to me.
In a moment's notice.
Is that the way it would work?
I'm down to
LAX sounds good flies to me. Direct to Miami.
Yeah.
The three of us would turn South Beach out. You know what I'm saying? Let's set up Dave Grutman.
Guys,
we just
met him. Let's not creep him out.
Sorry. Take it back.
I'm sorry to talk about you as if you're not sitting here listening to all this.
Rich, me and Teron, we did the brother nod. Larry David knows about it. So
we did.
By the way, Teron and I, polite handshake. TJ, full-on hug.
Okay.
I
mean,
that's what we do.
Bro, yeah. It was organic, though. It wasn't forced at all.
It just felt natural.
It was just a thing.
Okay. Didn't expect this interview to start this way, but I'll go with it. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
What are you doing out here in Los Angeles? You spend time out here in the off-season or something like that, or what?
No, not really. Not really. I'm rare on the West Coast.
Okay.
I just got back from Hawaii. I was at Tua's first youth football camp.
Okay.
Yeah, so on my way back east, stopped in and say hello to the legend himself.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I appreciate you referring to me as a pass through. No, seriously. In all, I love Tua, man. I love that guy.
Me too.
I got to meet him for the first time, like truly up close, and spend more than just a 10-minute interview with him when we were chit-chatting before the game against the Chiefs in Germany.
Yeah.
And in the broadcast meeting, and just getting to see who he is and get underneath the hood and listen to him and hear him talk and just be passionate and just be himself. It was awesome. It really was to meet him like that. What's he like with you guys, with you?
He's impressive. He's impressive. I got there a couple years ago, and he was 23, maybe 24. But just speaking to him, how detailed he is, his knowledge of the game, he's very cerebral. He sees the field in its totality. He's able to put people where they need to be. And first year learning the offense that Mike McDaniel brought down in South Florida, he was just able to retain and put everyone where they need to be so fast. He's impressive.
So what have you enjoyed about the Mike McDaniel era so far, Teron?
It's a blast playing football. It's fun. It's fun playing this game. We're grown men playing a kid's sport, you know, but it's serious. It's a lot of seriousness that goes into it. It's a lot of mental and emotional tolls, you know, aside from all the things that's physical. So
yeah,
it can be a weight, just going through the grind of meetings and then the seriousness of game day. So to have a coach like Mike is refreshing, is rejuvenating, energetic, and he creates an environment that is you look forward to going to work.
Well, I mean, when I spoke with him as well in the same broadcast meeting, and again, I think you were hurt, right, for that Germany game?
No, I came back.
You came back for it. That's right. Okay. So he spoke about his relationship with Tua and about what he feels his role as a coach is for everyone on the team, and how he takes it as a responsibility as a coach to bring out the best in anyone, and also to make sure that they grow as a human.
Yeah.
And I was moved about it. He was talking about being an only child, and how his upbringing made him ready to sort of focus on the individual.
Yeah.
And I was just blown away.
For sure.
You know?
For sure.
But I'm just wondering, when he first walks in the door, I mean, how long was it until you were buying what he was selling? And I know that that's a phrase that makes it sound like he's selling something.
Right.
But that's just the phrase, obviously, about a coach trying to deliver what he feels is his mantra. How long did it take to pick up on that, do you think?
Honestly, not long. Not long, because you can instantly see it's coming from a genuine place. It's true. It's organic. So, and I love the fact that's Mike's approach, because it's not necessarily his job description to develop and to as men outside of football.
Yes.
And to build these relationships. It's not his job to build off the field relationships and lifelong friendships with his guy, his teammates, his peers, his coaches, and his players. You know, it's not necessarily in his job description. His job is to win games. Call offense, win games. But he takes it personal. And the media sees Mike alive for his jokes and his always calm and in control demeanor in interviews. He's an emotional guy. Mike cries a lot.
What do you mean?
He's very passionate. Like you said, the word passionate. He's very passionate about and he takes things very serious. So
sure.
If we're coming off a loss and he felt like he didn't call a game well and he didn't put us in the best position, he really wears that. And it's just you want to play for a guy like that. You know what I mean? He's accountable. He's trustworthy. So he'll put full losses on himself when that's never the case in football. It's a collective game. Everybody wear that.
I'm a crier. I am. You know what I mean? Too. Like, but I've lost track of the number of times that I've teared up from this chair. Mm-hmm. That I get emotional. That I can't get through a sentence or whatever. And I don't. I don't mind it at all. I think that's a sign of strength,
yeah,
personally.
Right.
So, but when you hear a head coach cries a lot, that's why I want to make sure that we're talking about it in the same way, or people will pick up on it in the same way as why I just described it. I think that's a strong suit in somebody.
Yeah.
So when he's just passionate with you guys after a game that doesn't go your way, he'll wear it on his sleeve like that.
It can be in that sense where he's taking accountability, and he won't get too emotional with that. He stands in front of the room and he accepts that.
Yes.
He didn't call a good game, X, Y, and Z. But he can be talking a big first down. Raheem Mostert got a 3rd-and-1 conversion, and it just would bring up emotion for him. Like, he showed the play. Look at this block. Look at the way Raheem, this 3rd-down, wants the game, and he'd get emotional.
Before we move on to other subject matters about you and your career as well, Teron Armstead here on the Rich Eisen Show, year 12 for this offensive tackle here on the program. We once had Andrew Hawkins on here before talking about McDaniel teaching him the proper footwork, mm-hmm, for being a receiver, and yeah, basically saying, you do this, you're going to get off every time. And then it would actually happen that way. I imagine the run scheme he's bringing might have caused you to have a learning curve yourself.
Absolutely.
Am I right on that?
Fine. Absolutely.
What was
Absolutely.
That like? What was that like for you?
And the craziest part is, to me, I feel like I didn't get it until last year. So my second year in Miami under this scheme, because I played in New Orleans for 10 years,
yep,
for 9 years, mm-hmm, under Sean Payton, and we put up a lot of points, one of the top three offenses almost every year. Different scheme, different brand of football. And so it was a lot of relearning, unlearning, and new teaching. So as I'm trying to work these new techniques, because I've been successful with the techniques that I did, that I used, last year, our final stretch, maybe the last 7 games, it clicked for me. And everything that he preached, from sprinting off the football, speed, velocity, violence, don't worry about X, Y, and Z. Don't worry about the inside move. Don't worry. It clicked. And I'm excited for this one. I'm excited for this year.
It looks like you're ready to play right now, actually.
I would line up right now. I would line up right now.
Huh.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm excited.
Okay, so things clicked for you in a way. How do you respond to the the narrative, and, McDaniel would call it that, that you guys just, who did you really beat last year? How do you respond to something like that?
Go win, go play the game. We can respond via X, mm-hmm, all we want. We can talk interviews all we want, but the game is played on the field, you know what I mean? So people say with the narrative is we haven't won the big games. We haven't. So I wouldn't respond. Just let's go hit the field. Let's go do it.
And any similarities between Breeze and Tua?
Yeah.
What are they? What are they?
They're height. No, it's really funny. So I connected Tua and Drew kind of soon as I got there.
Okay.
And they talked for a while. But so Drew came down to training camp this year. And they spent some time together, and Tua run over to me. He like, yo, T-Stead, I'm taller than Drew. He was like so excited. Like, All of it. That was like his, forget everything else he talked about, reading defenses and all that anticipation. He was happy that he was taller than Drew.
Yeah.
But as far as similarities, the accuracy, the precision is scary to see. Drew is Hall of Fame, one of the best ever to touch a football, for sure. Tua's accuracy and his ability to manipulate and move defenders with his eyes, footwork, it's incredible. It's Drew Brees. And I know that's a tall comparison, but he stands up to it. He is an impressive thrower of the football. I saw him take steps of growth in his leadership and holding guys accountable. I saw him get on the great Tyreek Hill last year, which he never would have did the first year. So looking forward to this next one, him taking that another step in the management and piloting this franchise. I'm excited for him, and I'm do everything I can to keep him clean.
How'd Tyreek take that?
No other choice. No other choice. Like, Tyreek is Tyreek loves work, and he loves for everybody to put in that type of work and to be accountable. And so he wants that. He loves challenges. Mike has challenged Reek, and Reek will come back and go for 230. So when Tua, you need to be lined up here. He loves that. He loves that, and he's somebody that responds. So it's great for us. The more we can have that accountability, it'll be, we're going to win those big games.
And then I guess the last one for you on this is, straight up, when you saw that, did you think to yourself, okay, and how does that?
For sure, yes.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're like, okay.
Because I'm the OG on the team. So to see that from a young Tua, to see him becoming what he's becoming. When I got to New Orleans, Drew Brees already Super Bowl champion.
Yeah.
So I saw him do X, Y, and Z numerous times. And to see that from year one to two from Tua, I'm happy.
Teron Armstead here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, so who was on the phone with you third round of the 2013 draft? Where were you? Walk me through that as we're getting ready for another NFL draft.
Yeah, 2013.
Arkansas Pine Bluff, right?
Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Okay, so
Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Not many Arkansas Pine Bluff players in the NFL.
No. So I got the clip that kind of went viral, which I needed to get my name and exposure, was you was calling my 40. And I take off you and I think Mike Mayock. Mm-hmm. So you guys gave me some praise, hype me. I needed all of it in order to get drafted. That's how I felt. So fast forward to the draft process. I'm at my mom's apartment in central Illinois, southern Illinois. And I get a call from Mickey Loomis. Mickey Loomis, he say, are you ready to be a Saint? And I'm like, hell yeah, I am. I talked to him. I talked to Sean.
What was Sean saying to you? What did he say? What's it like? But you get Sean Payton on the other end of the line, and he's drafting you.
It was so many. I probably talked to six people.
Yeah.
So brief conversations with everyone. But Sean, just, you know, we're excited to have you. Can't wait for you to get here. I didn't know Sean was going to just like destroy my, just talk bad to me when I got there. But
what do you mean?
Sean's tough, man. Sean was a tough coach.
Well, he comes from the Parcells mold.
Absolutely.
So he was. Yeah. What are you willing to share, though? How he was coaching you?
He's just tough. Sean's tough. Anybody that's ever played for him, especially in those years, like as our later years together, Sean was way more personable. Mm-hmm. He valued relationships. Like, me and Sean are close. I love him to death. That's my guy. Those first four, five, I couldn't say the same. Like, it was just, he was a tough coach. He created an environment that made you be on top of every little detail every day, which is great as you're developing and growing into your own. Mm-hmm. It's tough. And it was an environment that challenged everybody, from the cafeteria staff to the groundskeepers to, people tell you Sean is a tough general. He is. I'll share a story. My first preseason game, we got the Chiefs in New Orleans. I'm out of Arkansas Pine Bluff, like we said. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to figure out my way. And the coach, O-line coach, teaching me this little technique, this new technique. I'm going to try it. We get in the game. So I get in, I check in third quarter. We run the outside zone to the left to me. Inside, the defensive end spikes inside, right? So he spikes inside the B gap, hits the running back. Running back, fall forward, no yard gain. We run 2-3 more plays. We come off the sideline. Sean is going crazy. I don't know who he's talking to, though, but he's on the sideline. So I get to the sideline. I sit down. Oh, he's talking to me. So he come. I'm talking about. He gets in my face. He's like, I don't know if you belong here. I don't know if you're good enough to be here. The guys you played against, they're selling insurance right now. I don't know. I don't know if you're good enough. But that wasn't. And I'm like, I don't know either, Sean. Really, at this point, I don't know either. But it was a.
But you didn't say that to him, right?
I didn't say nothing. I'm like, okay, yes, sir. Let me go get my stuff together. But at that moment, it was such a sink or swim moment, and he challenged people like that. That was it. Like, how are you going to respond? Are you going to go out and show that you are show and prove, or are you going to fold? And I could have folded because at that moment, it's my first preseason game out of Pine Bluff, Arkansas. I didn't know. And that was the last time that we ever had that type of interaction.
What if somebody come up to that kid on the bench and say, you're going to have 12 years at least?
I wouldn't have been able to see it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to see it. It just would. It didn't. I didn't have that foresight at the moment.
How long did it take to click? You have a moment when it clicked?
Yeah, rookie year, later in the year. Sean didn't like to play rookies because he's all about building trust. Like, you have to show that you belong.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I'm practicing hard. I'm going hard. I'm learning the techniques. I got the offense down, and he called me to the office. He said, it's time. I've been waiting for this. Like, I've been waiting for your development. I've challenged you. You've answered. You're the starting left tackle. And 9 years in a row.
Now, here you are, year 12, going to be a Miami Dolphin again. Teron Armstead here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, so tell me about the crowd control is what? Tell me what this is with the Madden 2024.
That's exactly what it is. It's up. So crowd control is an EP we created through Interscope and NFL with me and some of my peers, Darren Waller, Rarry McLeod.
Melvin Ingram. DJ Chark. And this is music? This is songs?
Music. Okay. Music, yep. So we created a short album, 6 songs, with some big artists, Rob 49, Mexican OT, and we created a soundtrack for Madden, the video game, NFL Madden, which is monumental for me because I was raised on Madden. I've never been a college football player, like college football fan, or I never watched, really. I was always NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So Madden raised me. And to be able to be on the video game as a player, superstar player, I might add, and I have 5 songs on there, like, yeah, it's monumental.
All right.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And it's a 6-song EP, again, being released across streaming platforms and the Madden 24 game. First time that NFL players are featured in music in Madden NFL. Okay. And it's wild. So DJ Chark is singing Baby Shark. It's kind of weird. No, he's not.
He's not at all. Not at all.
The exact opposite of that. Yeah, careful. I didn't mean to put that in your... Don't do it.
Too late.
Once it starts, you can't stop.
It's over.
All right.
There is a song on there called Him. I'm interested to hear
Him. Hear features him. You, that Mexican OT, and
Derek Milano.
Derek Milano. What Him is, are you Him? Is that what it is?
Him, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Derek Milano is a multi Grammy Award winning producer, songwriter, and he's on the hook. He's on the chorus of Him.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, pretty much they want to ask who you think you are. And the answer is, I'm him.
Isn't that a Stephon Diggs line? I mean, technically?
No.
It's a lot of self-proclaimed hymns.
But there's only one actual him.
No, no, it's a, you know, it's a few. Stefan is one of, he's a him.
He's a him?
He's a him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know that now that Diggs is on the Texans, a lot of people think this is your division now. The Bills have just tapped out of their last 6 years of their run because of the cap and whatever, and they're retooling, and now's the time for you guys to take this decision.
Yeah, no, I don't think our time, our passage to what we're trying to do, it don't go through anybody else anyway. Like, it's no, we need them to, no, we... We had an opportunity last year, and we didn't capitalize. But that's a household thing. That was a Miami Dolphins thing.
Okay.
We don't really care who's playing where else.
No. As long as Odell comes and plays with you? You heard about that?
That would be nice. That would be nice.
Have you spoken to Odell at all?
No, not nope, not personally. Not in a while.
Okay.
But know some people that's pretty close to him. And
okay.
I have nothing to share, though, Rich. I don't know why you're looking at me.
No,
I have nothing to shout out.
I'm looking at you because we're talking, man. You're on my show, and I greatly appreciate you being here.
Tamron, if I can ask, what was your experience with Hard Knocks like? Because I really enjoyed you guys on the second half of Hard Knocks. You have fun doing that?
It was different because I was in a space when Mike told us about it. I'm more of an old school player. I'm from Sean Payton and his Parcells tree. So Sean is he's never the type to overshare, and he never want to give out tips or an advantage to anybody. So when I first hear about Hard Knocks, I'm upset. I hate it. No, we don't need it. And going through the process, and it's shout out to them. Their film crew, the production, they did an amazing job of being there. But not being there, they really—it was—it was never a distraction.
NFL Films is
incredible.
They are the best.
Incredible. So it was an amazing experience. They were able to tell stories that people wouldn't be able to see, and it's necessary. And this the day we live in now with media and social media, they did an amazing job. Shout out to them.
Yeah, I mean now we know that you have a musical bent, that you're good at it, that you're him. These are things that you need to, get out there.
Yeah.
There's many different ways to do that. Well, this has been a blast. Thank you for coming here.
I appreciate
that. And I remember you ran a fantastic 40, but refresh my memory on what you ran your 40 in at the combine. What'd you run?
Unofficial 4.65 and official 4.71. And I'm telling you and Mike, y'all were.
That's fast.
Yeah,
Rich,
you put me on the front page of the NFL Network, whatever. Like, I'm like, man, this is great. Helped my draft position.
Hey, you helped your draft position. I was just commenting on because if anybody knows what a fast 40 looks like, it's definitely me.
can't teach speed.
That's right. I'm doing it. I'm doing it in a couple Saturdays. I'm doing it in a couple Saturdays.
What
Rose
time
Bowl.
We getting? What were you,
well, here's
doing?
The thing: is I have not. What's the word for it? Trained. I have not trained for it, but I have, as I mentioned beforehand, I think before we went on the air, I've cut weight. I might be down by the time it runs about 15 pounds from where I ran last year.
Why? You're going to be a feather.
I hope so. It's the get out.
Yeah.
It's the get out. And the amount of information I get from people, and it just screws with me. It's like, well, you got to stay low and then you got to get up, but don't pop up. You got to keep going forward. You're tripping over and falling. And I don't want to fall because I'm 54. I don't want to get hurt.
Please don't fall.
Thank you so much.
As a 40-yard dash record holder.
Yes, that's you.
I would say run as fast as you can.
Fastest still today, right, for offensive lineman?
Yeah.
Okay. That's right.
I am watching it right now. You are cooking. It is so fast.
Yeah.
Talking about Rich, right?
No. Well, I'm glad 12 years later we're getting to have this conversation. And look out for more of my texts and calls during the playing season. I'd love to have you. Whenever you're out here.
Hey, let me know.
The floor is yours. Crowd Control, again, the recent release of it featured in Madden of 2024. Congratulations on that. Congrats on your career to date and what you're going to do from here on out.
Thank you. Thank
you. Got it. Tamron Armstead here on The Rich Eisen Show.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. So every single story that is involved or reported on Shohei Ohtani as an interpreter has mentioned how that $4.5 million figure that the interpreter either... Got borrowed, got lent Ohtani's knowledge, or ripped off from Ohtani, right? And again, we had Tisha Thompson, the reporter of ESPN who broke the story originally, say, you know, they're only comfortable reporting $4.5 million because they have the bank receipts, or they had some sort of documentation for that amount, up to that amount. Right, nine different apparently $500,000 wires from a Shohei Ohtani account to the illegal bookmaker here in Southern California. And then the New York Times story that said that charges were near for Ipe Mizuhara, the interpreter involved, that charges were imminent, and said that according to their sources knowledgeable in the situation, that it could be more than $4.5 million. Well, we now know how much it is. This is breaking news. Go ahead, Mike.
Here it comes. And my eyes see.
Breaking news.
Oh, my eyes see.
Whew. A lot of zeros.
Court documents have been filed in the case in Los Angeles court. Alden Gonzalez of the Los Angeles Times saying that the figure is $16 million.
Whoa.
And that Shohei Ohtani's longtime interpreter and confidant, Ipe Mizuhara, has been charged officially with bank fraud.
Wow.
Wow.
Bank fraud.
A lot of money. Oh, my God.
$16 million.
Is this dude the worst gambler of all time?
I mean,
well, you have to sit here and wonder, is it really all on gambling?
Oh, now, sure.
You don't even know.
Maybe. I don't know.
It could because be. Honestly... You're gambling $16 million. What are you, like, letting it ride? Double or nothing? You know,
pressing,
like pressing,
chasing.
Oh, I see. You obviously know the phrases better than me.
Yeah, by the way, this guy could have rode UConn the last 2 years and made it all back.
I'm just gonna say, you mean Brock?
Bank fraud means
this is crazy.
All the stuff we were kind of speculating,
which is what he utilized.
Right, illegally accessed.
And all that stuff.
Made all the changes, whatever, yeah. Everything that we were kind of speculating in the first hour kind of seems like he was doing.
Wow.
U.S. Attorney Martin Estrada, I'm reading from Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Dodgers for the Los Angeles Times. He's quoting the U.S. attorney in the case, quote, "The bets do not appear to have been made on the sport of baseball." Do not appear. But does that mean $16 million? He gambled $16 million?
That's crazy.
It is insane, Mike. It is insane.
Phil Mickelson.
They were placed between 2021 and 2024, so this year.
Wow.
So he's bet on the Super Bowl, probably?
Now, this is an interesting thing. According to Estrada, this is the tweet, Mizuhara set up the account for Shohei Ohtani and didn't have access to Ohtani's reps or financial advisors. Now, of course, that you read that, and it's just like, well, he set it up for Ohtani, but he's the one being charged with bank fraud. Not Ohtani. And again, the U.S. Attorney's Office and the IRS and apparently Department of Homeland Security are the three organizations that have been working in tandem, according to the New York Times. They're not going to cover for Ohtani or the Dodgers or Major League Baseball just because they want them to come out scot-free. Like, they have the $16 million. And... for Ohtani to not notice it's missing, well, then two saludes, sir. that you have that much cash.
Take $16 out of my account. Yeah,
$16. You're like, what happened?
TJ, Brock, what are you doing?
Who bought Powerball tickets?
Yeah. Brock, did you get another drink on my tab? Are you kidding me?
This is what's called a live reaction.
Do you think that's why he deferred all of his money, because he was tired of getting ripped off? So
that's one way to not have it be ripped off is to say to the Dodgers, you keep it.
Keep this for a few years.
My buddy can't rip off. Doesn't have your accounts. Doesn't have access. He's not ripping you off.
A good one, TJ.
That's crazy. That's so much money.
$16 million.
There was this general sense that it was more than the $4.5 million. That's all that ESPN had paperwork for. And it turned out to be more. It turned out to be four times more. 4X more. Oh, my goodness. And this guy ripped off $16 million and tells ESPN he knew about it. He was just covering for me. What? And he thought he could get away with that?
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Right? And I'm sure there's some out there that are thinking, well, did Ohtani still cover for him? And is he just taking the hit right here? This is a hell of a hit.
It's a pretty big hit.
Yeah.
Bank fraud for $16 million is
that's
some time. You're going to do some time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Club Fed.
Okay.
Oof. Wow.
So that's the latest on this story. Waiting. I'm hitting refresh like every 2 seconds here to see what else did we find out. Because it's interesting, again, that they said he didn't have any access to his financial advisors or reps, meaning he defrauded the bank to make them think he's Ohtani.
Right.
Right. And Ohtani had no idea $16 million was being slowly dripped out of his account? In all honesty, Chris, how do you lose $16 million gambling? Right? If you're like Phil? Lost a lot? I mean...
You're playing super high stakes, obviously.
I know that sounds like maybe a naive question to ask, but I mean that is that's a significant amount of money.
That's a lot.
And then you go to work and it's just like, yeah, Ohtani thinks that, you know, he saw that fastball and he turned it around and then he's just going to go hang out with him and chill out with him and be his BFF. I saw him at the Rams game with him. Saints.
So he through 2024, so he was betting Super Bowl. I mean,
this year
for sure. Playoffs. I don't know if he's betting NFL. College football playoff.
Wow, not good at it. Unless, again, it's more than just for gambling.
Yeah, just if he's just
like did the $16 million wind up like in the account of the
right
bookmaker? Did all $16 million wind up there?
That's a lot of money to lose.
I have questions.
It's a lot of money to lose gambling.
I think you're gambling.
I have questions. 16's the figure. 16, according to court documents from the federal government today. Jeez. And that's how we close hour two.
You're playing $50,000 blackjack.
I was just going to say.
I don't know. You're playing.
I'd have to go in a deep hole.
Playing hours at a casino or something?
It's
I don't know.
Insane. Great.
It's a lot of lottery tickets. It's a lot of lottery tickets.
You would have won the Powerball if you put 16
down. A lot of doubling down.
Maybe he was trying to. That's one way to get out of it.
Yeah.
Anybody else reporting on this?
No. I'm just seeing the Alden Gonzalez tweet. It's kind of the only thing that's out there right now. Everyone's retweeting that,
right?
With the same reaction, you know, a lot of wows, a lot of $16 million. So, not really seeing anything else.
Charged with bank fraud.
Here we go. Bill Shankin. He's
at the LA Times.
Times, right? Mr. Mizuhara lied to the bank to access the account. Lied to them about being Mr. Ohtani.
Oh my God! And so he's just sitting there thinking.
Maximum penalty, 30 years in prison.
Up to 30
although
years.
The court has discretion.
I'm reading from the deputy editor of Sportico right now that he used the same name to purchase via eBay and whatnot approximately 1,000 baseball cards at the cost of approximately $325,000 and then had them mailed to Mizuhara under an alias named Jay Min and mailed to the clubhouse for Ohtani's current Major League Baseball team. Ohtani gave up his phone to investigators.
Cool.
They say there's no evidence, quote unquote, to suggest his complicity.
Wow.
I told you it's more than just gambling. What the hell is happening? Trevor Sikkema coming up talking draft.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.